The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. Good morning, and thank you for joining us for another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Joining us tonight on this episode of Hot Take Tuesday is Charlie Smith. Charlie, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you on Twitter/X?
Doing all right. Smith_MLB is where you can find me, chirp me, chat with me. Smith_MLB.
Very good. Also joining us on the episode is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you doing, and where can the fans find you?
I am doing excellent. I can be found at CushmanMLB. The podcast can be found at Bastards_Boston. You can find my Facebook-only baseball account at Terry Talks Sox. Find us on Instagram, and our YouTube channel is cranking now with a new staff. Find the Bastards of Boston over there.
Very good. So for this episode, we are going to be doing the hot takes, and we just wanted to extend a quick thank you to all of the followers, listeners, and fans that interacted with the tweet. We appreciate you, and it is always fun to be able to go through some of the opinions, some of the takes, and discuss them. With that being said, Charlie, what is the hot take you would like to bring to the table tonight?
So, first one, thank you, Cody, is coming from Tao Si Chow at Tao Si Chow. So, this one is Garrett Whitlock will come back as a starter and get injured again. I was talking about this on a prior show, and we've sadly done this, you know, all too often for this one guy, and it's really difficult because he has the talent, he has the ability, we've seen it already, just not as a starter, as a reliever, and he starts off like gangbusters and then falls apart. So I absolutely agree with this. I think that if he comes back into the rotation, he's going to find himself back on the IL. Terry?
Yeah. You know, my girlfriend loves the Gilmore Girls and this other show called Heartland. And she watches them over and over. And even I hate the shows, but I'm like, I've seen this one 7 times and I hate it. It's, you know the outcome. And that's what it's like watching Garrett Whitlock in the rotation. It's the same predictable outcome. It's like the first 20 seasons of South Park. Kenny's going to die. He's going to die. And Garrett Whitlock is going to get injured. And the dream for the Whitlock huggers, if there is such a thing, is going to die because he just can't do it. You got to put these guys where they're, you got to put them in the best position to succeed. And I mean, who's your seventh inning guy? Whitlock would be a great seventh inning guy. Imagine this. Liam Hendricks comes back. Let's say we don't trade Martin and Jansen. You could go Whitlock, Martin, Jansen, Hendricks, or put them in any order. I don't even care what order. Imagine having those four relievers. Imagine having four closers. That's what it would be, but we're going to put Whitlock in the rotation and then we're going to break him. Is there anything predictable in real life, sports, whatever? That's just, you know how it's going to end because that's the Whitlock thing. I was trying to write a list, but Charlie went through it so fast. I just got Kenny. I'm like, that was on my list. I'm like, I can think of 3 or 4 things that are that predictable. But yeah, it's like a Britney Spears video. You know, it's going to be insane. It's predictable.
Did not have a Britney Spears reference on the bingo card for potential outcomes. But everything that was said is absolutely correct, right? You know, I think all of us on this podcast love Whitlock as the gamer and as the pitcher that he is, right? He is the prototypical, give me the ball, I'm going to go figure out a way to get outs. And, you know, when we first started this starter experiment, he was giving us 4 or 5 shutout innings and, you know, high strikeout numbers. It looked like the extension of his 2021 reliever season. And then, like you guys mentioned, he just breaks down and we've continued to do this dance, right? And Terry, you brought up a great point, right? You know, there isn't that defined seventh inning guy, and the shorter you can make baseball games, the better, right? It's an embarrassment of riches to have that many closers or that many bullpen arms that you can go to and that you can count on and that you can rely on. We covered it in a previous show where it's like, okay, you know, last year, the year before, we didn't have 5 starters. It made sense to try to stretch him out and make him a starter because we knew that what he had was electric and could get you reliable and consistent outs. But the rotation, even if you believe in its long-term sustainability or not, is producing at a very high level. We don't need these bullets wasted at that area. So just preserve the asset. Let him be good at, well, I guess it's tell him to be good at what he's good at, because it seems like he's probably the one pushing the starter agenda. And I know that was something that he had wanted to do. And I hope there's a biopic or a documentary or at least just an in-depth article about this, because it is one of the more puzzling story arcs to follow as to why he keeps getting thrown into the starting rotation. Terry.
Unrelated, but I normally go, I like to creep the hot taker, see where they're from. This guy's name is, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce it right. The first name looks like it's pronounced Tao, and his last name is maybe Chu, Chou, and he is from Taiwan.
Chou.
Taipei, yeah. City, Chou. Taiwan. And Cody, you've got, you know, part of your family comes from the same country. So if that's where he lives currently, and that's what it looks like, that's kind of cool to have a listener from that part of the world. So I just wanted to shout out where he's from, and thanks for participating.
Great to have you on. Terry, what is the hot take you would like to bring to the table?
Mine, I think for the second week in a row, and he filled out his bio since then. He is from Chino Hills, California. His name is Steve Hunt. Also followed the Facebook account, so that is growing. For those of you, for the non-Twitter people, he's actually got a really interesting hot take. His says, inspired by the quality young pitching and positional talent on the way, Cora signs an extension mid-season. Now, that's not on anybody's bingo card. And I'm going to disagree with it because he's making $3 million this year. And he wants at least 8 because that's what Craig Counsell is making. And I think there's a team that's going to give him a little bit more than that, 9 or 10 million. And he's going to make probably more money than he ever made in his big league career. I can pull that up right now. Having said that, I mean, if the Red Sox came out and they offered, if they would just match Craig Counsell's deal, I think Cora would stay. I think he loves Boston, and I think he probably would stay. So we'll see. Hang on. I got his, I should have his salaries. Did they just do? No, here it is. So guess how much Alex Cora made in his career. Do you guys have it? If you don't, guess.
18 million, maybe.
18? What's Charlie going to say? You're on mute, Charlie.
12.5 million.
Charlie's a little bit closer, 14.9 million. So if Alex Cora gets the same exact deal that Counsell got, that's 40 million over 5 years. So he's by far, and this doesn't include what he's already made as a manager, which is probably, he's making three this year, and I think it's escalated every year. He was only making around $1 million in 2018, believe it or not. So he by far is going to make more, you know, as a manager than he ever did as a player. And it kind of was a different era. I mean, he played from 1999 to 2011. So there's been a lot of inflation since then with MLB contracts, but yeah, we'll see. So what do you guys think?
I don't think the Boston Red Sox are willing to go in that direction. I don't see it happening. I think that if he wants to go the route of being a manager with a team that's going to have like a young, like that mindset, it's going to be a different team altogether. If he really wants to do something like that crazy way just out there, it'd be like Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh just unlocked their new cheat code in Paul Skeens, who everybody knows him and everyone knows his girlfriend on social media. Guy had 17 pitches in his opening day debut exceed 100 miles an hour. That would be the team that he would have to go to, and they'd have to say, hey, listen, we want to bring you to Pittsburgh. We're willing to give you, you know, $8.5 million over 6 years, and we want you to be the manager here 7 years. We want to pay you more than Council. We're serious, and we're going to show you how serious we are. It's going to be something like that. It won't be in Boston because the Red Sox are not going to give a manager that kind of contract, and they're definitely not going to shell out that kind of money for their manager when we haven't been able to get that kind of money for the players. So as great as a take it is, I wish, you know, that we would have, you know, a manager want to commit to Boston that long. But when we do get a manager to commit that long, I don't know if I want it to be Alex Cora. So could it happen? Maybe. Will it happen? I'm like 5% chance it happens.
This is a great thought experiment. And, you know, thank you to this individual for putting this one on Twitter, on X. This could be just the classic case of both parties part ways mutually at the end of the season. You know, the core does look good. The prospects are enticing. There's a lot of reasons to be excited about Boston baseball, you know, in the future, maybe not necessarily this season. But Alex Cora seems to be, you know, one of the remaining of the old guard type managers. Yes, he's, you know, in on analytics, and you know, he's a pretty modern manager, but he does handle certain things kind of the old way. And it doesn't seem like this organization in front office is moving in that direction, let alone, as Charlie mentioned, committing, you know, 40 plus million over 5 years to just a manager, right? Let alone a manager that has been at odds openly with players and front office and management, while also, you know, trying to keep the peace with, you know, playing patty cakes or, you know, being coy with the media. But it could just very well be a time for bygones to be bygones, right? As you continue to bring up, you know, new players, prospects and whatnot, you're going to want to have a fresh voice and an alignment top to bottom in a cohesive organization. And I don't know if Alex Cora is that individual. Terry.
So just to be thorough here, I think he's more open to it from an optimism standpoint as far as the direction of the team. So I think he views the team as the direction is better than he expected, and we're going to get to that destination a little bit quicker than he thinks. But here's another question. Does Breslow want him back? Does Breslow want a manager who's far more popular than he is?
I don't know if you can say Cora is that much more popular than he is at this point.
I think you can to some degree, but I would understand why some people may say otherwise. I don't think that he wants to go with a guy that he was told had to be his guy. I think if you're in the position that Craig Breslow is in, you want to be the person that makes the decision for who is going to be managing your ball club. There's been a lot of weird things like getting consultants and stuff like that in Boston. it's a little bit bizarre because he realizes that he's kind of taking on a little bit of a sinking ship. So it wouldn't surprise me for him to want to pick a new manager. It really wouldn't surprise me at all.
Here's another question, just being thorough. Breslow wants Devers to bat third. Cora wants him batting fourth. They disagree about it. They go to Sam Kennedy. Which one gets their way?
Devers bats seventh for some reason.
I think... Oh, go ahead, Charlie.
No, go ahead, please.
I think Alex Cora gets his way.
I don't think anyone is going to argue with Alex right now. Had he not won a World Series, had he not been brought back a second time, had he not had the amount of experience he's already had as a manager, I say he's going to get overridden. But there have been conversations with, it's a group decision, or, you know, we're evaluating our best options and whatnot, as opposed to saying, I think this is what we should do. You know, it's... You don't hear a manager in Boston fully owning every decision that gets made, but I think it would take a lot for Alex Cora to say, yeah, this is a hill I'm going to die on. I don't think he does it with every situation, but I do think he does it on a pretty fair number.
I just think Breslow probably feels like he has a little bit less influence with Cora being, you know, the manager. And if he goes with another manager, now Breslow's going to have a little bit more influence, because there's going to be some contingencies on why that manager gets hired and what he's willing to kind of tolerate, as part of taking that job.
Another interesting wrinkle I think we need to consider when, I guess, assessing Breslow's performance, for lack of better terms, right, is he was always considered to be like an academic pitcher. He wasn't one that, you know, had overpowering stuff that you could just blow it by you. He had to figure out crafted way to get outs, keep players and batters, you know, kind of off balance. And, you know, he is a former member of this organization, right? So like, he very much knows how this organization operates. And as a general manager, is he the type of individual that wants to have, you know, that micromanaging level type decision-making as a general manager? Or is he just going to say like, hey, look, you and I are going to be, you know, like two hands and a machine, right? We're going to help wash each other. Like, you tell me what you need, I'm going to do my best to go out and get you what you need. But at the same time, like, I'm not going to be the one kind of beating down your door saying, you need to play this, you need to do this, you need to do this, like it is in Moneyball. Is that a type of scenario in which, you know, he just kind of says like, hey, look, it's hands off. It's my first year. I'm working on so many different other things that I got to pay attention to. We're going to let Alex kind of run the organization run the roster the way he wants to. Or, you know, do we think he's that type of person that wants to kind of overstep his boundaries? Charlie.
Craig Breslow also is a World Series winner with the Boston Red Sox. He was on the 2013 team. So, man, there's another wrinkle into it too. You know, I'm talking about how I think that very few people are going to argue with Alex Cora because he's already got a World Series title as a manager. Breslow has not had one in management before, but Terry, I think you did talk about this on a prior episode where, you know, because he's been on a prior team that's won a World Series, like he knows what needs to be done. He knows what needs to get added and what pieces are missing. It's just a matter of putting it all together.
Yeah, he knows what a championship team looks like. He sat in that locker room when those newly signed players came in and just embraced the city of Boston and went on that magical run. And we went into this long thing on which World Series team was the most likable and which was the most hateable. And we don't have time to do that on this episode, but yeah, he's been there. So he's had some constraints and there's been a lot of empty seats still. We're not seeing more fans show up. So perhaps maybe And another thing, too, I haven't really talked about this. If there's a lot of empty seats, the seats that are getting bought are probably for less money than what they would have been had the team been better, the stadium been a little bit more full. So I think the Red Sox are not just losing money on those empty seats. They're still kind of losing money on the seats they are selling, because they're selling them cheaper to get them in there. So I think at some point they're going to be like, we need to make a splash. It doesn't even have to be an insane splash. Just get some proven guys in there. Get that Teoscar Hernandez type bat onto that team.
Anything else that you would like to add on this hot take?
It was a good one. But no,
that was a great one. Alrighty. My hot take for the evening comes from Aiden Fuller at Aiden Fuller 07. Vaughn Grissom struggles until All-Star break, but then has a Tristan Casas like second half. And I think I can speak for all of us wholeheartedly when I would say we would love for him to have a Tristan Casas like second half. You know, I pulled his stats up, and just from, you know, we'll say May 26th and on, you know, as we're kind of getting Vaughn Grissom up to speed here. He batted .298 with 18 home runs, 50 RBIs, 17 doubles, and two triples. So if we get that kind of production over the course of 89 games out of Vaughn Grissom, I think all of us would be over the moon. I don't think we necessarily need to get that robust of production, but I also don't think it's going to be very likely that Vaughn Grissom goes nuclear for 90 games as he continues to work his way back from what I believe was a groin injury that he missed the beginning of the season for. I think I see him slating somewhere a little bit closer to the 270, 280, maybe double-digit home runs, and probably 30 or 40 RBIs. Charlie, what do you think?
Goodness gracious, would I love for this to be, you know, the truth, but man, oh man, do we need to see magic soon? It's like the candle is like, we're trying to light the candle and like get it going, or it's like the wick is like, it's there and there's not much candle left. I feel like there's something that they need to unlock with Vaughn Grissom in order to get him back to where he was a couple of years ago, because 2 years ago, man, Vaughn Grissom was the truth. He was exciting to watch. He was young. His first career home run at Fenway Park was an absolute bomb, worthy of a bat flip, Vaughn, if we're going to flip bats. Excuse me. Truth be told, man, if he has even half of a Tristan Casas second half, that would be incredible, and I would take that.
Terry?
So Aiden Fuller, the hot taker here, and thanks again for participating. It's what makes this format so great on Tuesdays. He just recently started following the account. I remember the follow, and of course, it's my policy that I immediately follow back, which I did. I don't think Aiden knows us very well. Like, this is a fairy tale type thing. Like, in no scenario is Grissom going to be a Tristan Casas type monster that just strikes fear in opposing pitchers. That's not who Grissom is. And like Cody said, we would love it, but we're realists. And I'm not bashing you, Aiden. I'm just saying, you know, this is who we are. I'll just say this. In a very short sample size, Vaughn Grissom is a .270 hitter with a .318 on base. And he's only hit 5 career home runs. They were all in his rookie year, but the sample size is so small. I mean, he probably will never be a 3,100 guy, obviously. But he's going to have some power production. If you just give me those career stats, the .270 average and the .318 on base, and that's what he ends up with later this season, you'll take that. When was the last time we got that at second base? It was Dustin Pedroia. So just give me that. and I'll be more than happy. And continue the defense. He'll commit some errors eventually, but pleasantly surprised with the defense so far.
Very well. I mean, yeah, as long as the defense keeps, you know, above water, I think we will patiently wait for the offense to come along, because we have seen it and we know that it's there. You know, I think everybody mentioned when he was coming over from Atlanta that the defense was kind of the main question mark, but we knew that the bat was solid. But Terry, what is the final hot take for the evening?
We got two left, but we'll just settle on one. Bill Tenney, let's see if we can get some background on him. He is from Florida, which is where Cody grew up. And diehard Sox fan, diehard Dolphins fan. So that's a little weird, because he must hate the Patriots but love the Red Sox. But Bill Tenney says, Jarren Duran is the best player on this team. So maybe I'm supposed to lead that off, or do you want to, Charlie?
In the month of April, or like, what are we talking about? Because so far this month, no stolen bases. We thought that there's a chance he could actually lead the league in stolen bases. He's hitting 257 with no homers, two RBIs, was 2-for-11 in his last series with a pair of strikeouts. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I appreciate you inputting the take, but I can't get down with that one. I don't think Jarren Duran is there. I think that we're still seeing the streakiness of Jarren Duran. He's exciting to watch when things are going great, but when things aren't working, you're not getting on base. You don't have the ability to steal bases. You haven't stolen one in the month of May, and it's May 12th. So we've now seen some people in the last week steal your total bases for the season. No, he's not the best player on the team. I can't get behind that.
Cody.
I mean, at this point, it comes down to consistency, right? Because we see the high octane, we see the high level, the high end performance that he could have, right? April, he was on all cylinders. He was making plays in the outfield. He was making plays on the base paths. He was, you know, hitting extra bases. And then, you know, had a little bit of a slump, or, you know, maybe they made an adjustment to him and, you know, he hasn't quite figured it out. You know, he does have that dynamic ability that I think few players do have in this league. I think he could be one of the better players on the roster, but I don't think he'll ever be that, you know, intimidating. We know that we're in trouble from the jump type guy, right? He's going to be a great table setter. He's going to be a great person to have at the top of the lineup. But I just don't see him being the thumper that everybody's like, oh man, we got Duran and the Red Sox coming to town. We gotta, you know, buckle up. It's gonna be difficult.
So before I just get into mine, who is the best player on the team? It's Devers, right?
It's gotta be at this point.
Should be.
Yeah, I mean, he's hitting 288 with a 403 on base, only four home runs. And Devers is the best player on the team, so it's hard to agree with that hot take in the traditional sense. I will say this, since Casas is out, I think Duran's the second best player on the team. I mean, he's leading Major League Baseball in triples right now. He's got six of them. I don't think anyone's had more than 11 in a handful of years. I could be wrong. I don't think I am.
I'll check that for you.
But, and a lot of those triples have been recently. So that kind of offsets the stolen base a little bit. And I'll say this, even though I don't think Jarren Duran is the best player on the team, I think he's one of the more complete players. He can hit for power if he wants to. He does only have one home run on the year, but his on base is pretty good. Let's see. Yeah, I mean, he's hitting 261 with a 328 on base. He's hit 9 doubles. He's scored 23 runs, which I wonder where that stands in MLB. Let me see. Yeah, not in the top 23, but I just think he is a very complete player, and he's the top of the order guy that you want. So not the best player, like the hot taker says, but I think he's number two right now, and probably number three would be Connor Wong.
So just went back real quick to see, since 2018, there have only been two leaders above 10. Bobby Witt last year for the Royals, 23. He had 11. And then Ketel Marte in 2018, who had 12 for Arizona. Before that, I mean, you'd have guys that would have 14, 15, 16. I mean, Grandy Man had 23 back in 07. We talked about that a couple shows ago. So, yeah, I mean, it's exciting to see that. But I think that Jaron Duran will easily eclipse 12 to 14. I think there's a chance for some magic there. But I would really love to see Jaron Duran develop a little bit more power, too, to see if there's, you know, the capability of 10 to 12 triples, 15 to 20 homers, 50 stolen bases. I don't want him to be a 3,100 guy homers, RBIs. Like, that's never going to be him. But, yeah, if Jaron Duran can, you know, take a couple steps up in his game, yeah, there's a chance he could be number two.
I mean, it's just awesome that we're even having this conversation, right? Because, you know, when he got called up and he went so poorly for so long, we're like, oh, no, you know, what do we have in Duran? Like, are we going to get rid of this guy? Are we just going to, you know, kind of set him free and get a great start to last year? And we're like, can he sustain it? And then he had the injury. So the fact that he's even worked his way into this conversation, I think, is, you know, a tremendous tip of the cap to him.
I'm just trying to see real quick where his defensive war is. So let's see. Ah, crap. I swear Baseball Reference is a little bit different for some reason. Wow, this is impressive. Let's just go in order here. Jaron Duran debuted in 2021. Had a negative 0.4 defensive war next season. Negative 0.6, so he's a little bit worse in 2023. That was, 2022. 2023 was about the same, negative 0.5. So an extremely negative defensive war in his first three seasons. Right now, according to Baseball Reference, 1.1 in the positive. That's pretty good. And he's got an offensive war of 1.2. So when I say he's, at least this season, I think he is a more complete player than Rafi Devers. Even though Devers is better, like he can impact the game in a couple of ways that Jaron Duran can't, I still think Jaron Duran kind of checks off a couple more boxes with the defense, with the base running, with hits in general. He is a good hitter, and he goes the other way quite a bit, and he's drawing walks, like I said. So there's a reason I'm a big Jaron Duran guy.
Deservingly so. Charlie, was there another hot take that you would like to discuss on the pod?
Yeah, so this is actually going to come from AD Funkified, Mr. Scott at Funkified with a one instead of an I at the end. John Henry has entered, I believe, the chat. It feels like one of those comments. You either die the hero or live long enough to be the villain era. Yeah, I'm actually watching The Dark Knight again just for fun. And coincidence, that line is in that movie. Yeah, absolutely. You really were the hero. You brought us titles, and now you've gone full John Henry, which is so sad that that's like a thing now. It's like, oh man, that's like an Angel Hernandez call. Going full John Henry is just, you know, being cheap as heck, and it's just brutal. But yeah, I mean, everybody wants John Henry to sell the team because it feels like he just doesn't care about the Red Sox. So very valid. Love the take. Thank you so much.
Was that the Joker that gave that line, or was it Harvey Dent?
Nope, Harvey Dent said it. He was talking about it at dinner with Bruce Wayne and, oh my God, Maggie Gyllenhaal to go for Katie Holmes.
The
the double date.
I was going to my favorite Joker meme, and it's only a meme, wasn't in the movie. It says, give a man a plane ticket, he'll fly for a day. Push him out the emergency exit, he'll fly the rest of his life. That was so good. The Joker made that movie. He was just so good. And even though he was a bad guy, there was so many correct observations about the world. You know, he was a violent psychopath, and that's why he was the bad guy. But there were some observations where I'm like, he made a good point with that one. But getting to the hot take here, it's absolutely correct. John Henry is the villain. And I mean, if you put that exact poll out there, is he the good guy or is he the villain? 95% of Red Sox fans are going to say he's the villain. And the 5% are just the naturally, you know, delusional faction of the fan base that just can't handle life. So he's absolutely the villain, and that's not really that hot of a take. It's a correct take.
I think the most frustrating aspect of all of this is it seemed to be like choices that John Henry made to become this villain, right? It wasn't like he was put in a predicament or a tough position or had to figure out a way out of, you know, a bad spot. It's the decision to not sign players, the decision to not sign, you know, spend money or, you know, I don't even know at this point, but yeah, it's absolutely the right end of the argument to be on. He is 100% gone full heel and become the villain.
Absolutely.
Anything else to add?
I think John Henry is Harvey Dent and Sam Kennedy's the Joker. That's who I'm going for in my parody. That is all I have.
Maybe we'll get like a 4 years in October, 30 for 30, to just discuss what this time period has been like for the Boston front office.
Can't disagree.
All righty. Well, then we will wrap there. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on this episode. Have a great day and take care.